Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of April, 2021. Welcome to episode 71 of this podcast series, aka Work From Home Journal, but I've now gotten both vaccinations, episode 14. So, progress. Thank you. Big Pharma, thank you. Project Warp Speed. The concept of the show is to just have a brief chat about what comics I've read since the last time I did one of these episodes, which should make this pretty much the books I read during April. These books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost them on my Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those. But those posts are not exactly spoilers for this podcast, since those are just lists. But here, there's a little more review, a little more critique, and a little more discussion. But first, there's a little more feedback. Martin Gray reported, mid-listen, that the March episode was a fun show, as always. And he thanked me for posting the link to Ange's guest post about Lori Lamoris on Mart's Too Dangerous for a Girl blog. And then he got to the important stuff. Anyway, another top show, and I must say, your haircut is looking amazing. I know, Mart, I get that from a lot of people. And it's just hard to argue any of those wise, calm, and properly reasoned assessments. Unfortunately, Martin did have to go on and point out a couple of mistakes. Professor, as regards how representative that issue of Showcase starring King Faraday was of the times, it wasn't actually a Silver Age issue, because those stories were reprints from Danger Trail from 1950, presumably republished to cash in on the James Bond craze. Now that I would not have guessed, because they did certainly feel to me to be more Silver Age than Golden. Interesting. Mart also pointed out that I accidentally called Maxwell Lord in that Countdown to Infinite Crisis issue Morgan Edge. Well, they are both slick operators, he opined. And yes, I do tend to get my sleazy overlords confused. Chris Lydon was glad to see that the episode released on April 1st was in fact not a hoax, not a dream, not an imaginary podcast. Social media support for last episode came from Manuel Carmona from Buy Indie Comics Day, Karen from Between the Pages, James from Karen, Kirk Spencer Big Five Army, Clinton from Fan Film Fridays, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Billy D and Herman, both from the Into the Weird podcast, and the All-Star Squadron podcast, A World on Fire. Ed Moore from Teal Productions. Paul from The Collected Edition. Al from the Warlock Thanos podcast. Dave's Comic Heroes blog. Drew from Comics for Fun and Profit, Spy Vinyl. Vic in Phoenix. Derek William Crabb of The Fan Holes. Chris Willett. And our reigning Listeners of the Year, the Sutherlands from the Rad Adventures Network. And now, on to the books that I read last month, and as we do on this show, we're going to categorize, classify those books. And first up are any issues that I read specifically for podcast appearances, the homework books. And we do have one for Quarterbin 167. I read another Impact book, The Jaguar Annual Number 1. And comics I read for listening to podcasts. And there are more of these than usual because DC Infinite Universe app, whatever that's called now, and the fact that I love following along with comic book podcasts whenever I have the chance, and certainly the app gives me more opportunities to have that chance. So to listen along with the unnumbered episode 251, of From Crisis to Crisis, co-hosted by Podcasting's Michael Bailey. I read Superman 113, Superman the Man of Tomorrow number 5, and Adventures of Superman 536. In these issues, Superman and Lois are dealing with the effects of their called-off wedding. But fear not, because Metropolis and the world is celebrating a different celebrity marriage, the wedding of Lex Luthor. I also will heartily recommend From Crisis to Crisis, episode 250, in which the co-hosts had a very long and in-depth chat with John Bogdanov. Very good stuff. And a listen to episode 49 of Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace, hosted by Angela. I went very old school and read the story The Crime Combine from Sensation Comics 32 from all the way back in 1944. Obviously, they just covered the lead story, but I read the whole thing, 40, 44 pages, something like that. Some Golden Age goodness there, including a pretty solid story featuring Wildcat. And a listen along with episodes 95 and 96 of the Legion Clubhouse. I read Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes 245 through 248, which included the end of the excellent Earth War storyline, and also an adventure against the Fatal Five. And to listen along with episode 48 of The Overlooked Dark Knight, I read Batman 430, the last issue of Jim Starlin's run. Now, earlier I mentioned the all-new All-Star Squadron podcast, A World on Fire, and somewhere along the line, my subscription to that podcast got deleted from my device. And as soon as I figured that out, I resubscribed and saw that I had some making up to do. So to listen to episodes 3, 4, 5, and 6, I think, I read All-Star Squadron 2 through 7. And I think I'm caught up now. So on to new comics that we read right off the shelves. And there, technically speaking, aren't any. But we are going to keep this segment as part of the show because there is a chance that sometime in the future, it could happen, though I honestly don't know when, that we could have one. So moving on to the general comic reading that I did. Digging through the stacks, I ran across a comic sent to me a few years back by Mark Adams from the excellent Mark's Mess podcast. Action Comics Weekly 611. The best story in here was probably the Dead Man one. Mike Barron's story featuring perhaps the devil himself. But the best part of the issue was the letters page, where they reprinted past letters to DC from readers who later became comics professionals. So sometimes you see these letters scattered through random late 1960s and 1970s, I guess 1980s, comics. But here, all pulled together, we get letters from Mike Friedrich, Marty Pasco, Mark Grunwald, and Ohio's own Kerry Bates, all expressing their opinions on various DC Comics issues. And that was a very fun discovery. And when I posted on the Eyes and Ears blog, the link that included the Action Comics Weekly, Billy Hogan, commented that his favorite of the series within ACW was the Blackhawk series, which I totally agree with. Unfortunately, this particular issue did not feature that team. But again, that Dead Man story was quite good. From Sir Iowa's Joe, I read Invincible 118. You see, I was at a crossroad, whether I would start watching the new Amazon animated series or whether I'd go back and start reading the trades first. I mean, I know the basic elements of the story, the first big twist, so I can go either way. And then again, just going through the stack just to see what I had, I saw this issue, which was an invitation into a new storyline at a cover price of 25 cents, which is probably why Joe sent it to me. So like I said, this was a jumping on point, And it even started with 4 pages of backstory delivered in a much more entertaining fashion than the recent X-Men books have been doing with their information pages. And then we get a totally new setting, an alien world, from Mark Grayson and family. Good issue, good stuff, a good starting point. Comics talk about that a lot. They promise that a lot, that this is a good starting on point, good jumping on point. But this one, Invincible 118, actually delivered on that promise. Manuel Carmona from Truthful Comics and the comic Project New Wave, he sent a care package earlier in the year, one that included The Flash number 9 from 2011, leading into Flashpoint, which eventually led into the New 52, of course. Now, I mentioned last time that Manuel specifically sent me the best kinds of books, cheap books. Just as an example, this one was completely coverless, which is one of my favorite subcategories of comics. Now, in this case, I just blame the Speed Force. I mean, that just makes sense. He also sent The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones number 11, in which Indy heads from Australia to Barcelona on the trail of the fourth nail, which was to be used at the crucifixion, but was not needed. A very strange book to read over Easter weekend, I have to admit, but there you go. In The Arsenal Special from 1996, I haven't had much experience with this character beyond, oh, poor Roy. And this issue was pretty much, oh, poor Roy. And he's had worse luck other places than he did in this issue specifically, but still. Aw, poor Roy. Got a very nice care package recently from Dr. Ange, which had a good range of books, including The Human Target number 1. This is the Vertigo version from 2003 from Peter Milligan. I think this one might be a makeup for the last Peter Milligan book he sent, which I was not as big a fan of, but this one, much more to my tastes. You've got Christopher Chase taking the identity of a Hollywood producer type, with a pretty idyllic life, actually. But Chase has gone beyond his normal deep cover. We get the sense he actually believes that he is this other guy down to the core. And that belief comes crashing down, and Chase crashes with it. It's a great setup for a series, for a story, and for a Vertigo take on a series, especially with all the mixed up psychological issues that Chase's life has brought with him. So I think there's a lot of potential in this series. Dr. Fate, number 1, this is the 2003 run from the Hector Hall incarnation of the character. Of all of the non-Kent Nelson takes on Dr. Fate that I know of, this one might be my favorite. It's just one issue, so I probably shouldn't get too carried away. I think it was a 5-issue miniseries. But for what it is, it certainly got off to a good start. Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, sent some comics in recently, including books such as Batgirl, number 1, from 2008, the series starring Cass Kane. Good issue, balancing Cass's own history and issues and adventures and how well or not so well she fits into the Bat family. It seems that Bruce himself is her only ally. Really good first issue, setting up plots and subplots in action and drama. Again, solid. And from Action Lab, Athena Voltaire, number 3. Adventurous lady in the late 1930s fighting proto-Nazis and gathering archaeological relics with magical super properties. Yes, that is not the most original idea, but it's a fun idea. And this issue delivers that idea in a very strong way. Fun, fun issue. And Switchblade Stories number 2, an independent book from Chris Askham. This is a girl gang story, and it's a pretty rough one. Some actual switchblades are used, and a few firearms when necessary, but it was a good and gritty crime comic. Now, early in March, I was able to get my first COVID shot scheduled, And the town is about an hour away. And M, being the good kid that they are, drove me down there. And all I had to do was buy them lunch. It was a pretty good trade-off. I think a good bargain all the way around. Now, fortunately, on the way back, we just happened to swing by the used book and record and comic store where my university campus is located, Pulp Reality. And we found some decent stuff there in the 50-cent boxes. And I think there's an important lesson that M learned, and that is that an 80-page DC book, even if it's currently available on the app, is always worth the 50 cents, even if they don't have a cover. I would say especially if they don't have a cover, which was the case with Justice League of America 58, which had a lead story featuring Despero and one featuring Professor Fortune, who I must say did not put my academic profession in the most positive light. I would definitely not have voted for that guy to get tenure. Just saying. And another coverless DC issue from the 1970s, Sword of Sorcery number 3, featuring Farford and the Gray Mauser. Good battles with pirate ships and swords and all the necessary fantasy elements. You paying attention, Clinton Robison, host of the new fantasy comic podcast, Days of High Adventure. And The Shadow number 4 from Radio Comics from just before I was born. The diabolical Dr. Demon, thought dead in the aftermath of World War II, is back to bring the Nazi Reich to its rightful glory. But fortunately, the shadow clouds the minds of enough men to make sure that that does not happen. And from the world's greatest comics, Black Friday, and various other sales, books that cost me anywhere from 50 cents down to 10 cents, I picked up another Justice League issue, Justice League 160, a star-studded special featuring the JSA, the JLA, and a crew of historical DC fighters. We're talking Jonah Hex, the Viking Prince, Miss Liberty, and a few others. It was a time travel adventure, meaning they got to fight some dinosaurs and aliens. Very fun story, that one, definitely worth the 10 cents. And Merlin, number 1, from Adventure Comics, from 1990. This is a nice black and white origin story of Merlin. And by origin, I mean on the dramatic last page, Merlin is born. Now that's how you do an origin story. And some kids' books that I read, mostly from Sir Rob's care package and also some from Pulp Reality or Kirk Spencer. I read a pretty good amount here. Betty, 192, Veronica, 206, Pep, 159 and 197, Dennis the Menace, triple feature, number 12, Sad Sack 35, Treasury Chest of Fun and Fact, Volume 22, Issues 16, 17, and 19, Wacky Races, Richie Rich Zillions, 21 and 25, and Archie Pals and Gals, number 115. The Betty and Veronica issues were a two-part crossover story featuring the gals as secret agents B and V, which is one of my favorite of the Archie Gang's imaginary story frameworks. And attention must be paid to Archie's Pals and Gals. That issue I got courtesy of Kirk Spencer. Always a fun title. And I've mentioned this fact before, but it is worth another example. I get this information from the house ad inside one of the Richie Rich issues. According to this, Harvey put out 14 comics in the month of December 1980. 11 and a half were dedicated to Richie Rich. Casper shared one title with Richie, while Sad Sack and Hot Stuff each got their own issue. I mean, that was an era of total Richie Rich domination. All right, time to take a break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about graphic novels, trade paperbacks, and long runs that I read in April.
The Justice League wouldn't help him, so Batman formed a new team. These people of power are all looking for something, be it their past, or a purpose, or simply somewhere to fit in. These are the heroes for a troubled age. They are the Outsiders.
We are the Outsiders!
Covering Mike W. Barr's 1983 series from the very beginning, as they face villains no other team can, like Agent Orange, the Force of July, and the Nuclear Family. Puns. This is The Outcasters, a Batman and the Outsiders podcast. Look for us with The Huntress podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Or listen at our website, thehuntresspodcast.com, and follow us on Twitter at @BatOutcasters. We are the Outcasters, because to live outside the law, you must be honest.
We are the Outsiders!
And we're back to talk about trades, long runs, and miniseries that I read last month. Some of my podcasting colleagues are quite excellent at timing their episodes to coincide with pop culture events. The fellows at Back to the Bins, for example, have even developed a name for this, the SCORE, Shameless Coattail Riding Episode. Or take Derek Crabb. Over at the Fanholes podcast, he has shown a remarkable patience at times. The Fanholes recorded a New Mutants episode to go along with that movie's release. The original release. You know, the one many years ago. And he held it, and he held it, and finally released it last year when that movie came out. They also had a series of Wonder Woman episodes, a month of Wonder Woman, all ready to go. And they had to move, and move, and move again those episodes until WW84 was finally released. And trust me, you don't want to ask Derek about Black Widow. Now, here at Relatively Geeky, we've done a few timely short box showcases over the years. Me and Em call them our search engine optimizing bandwagon jumping episodes. But I have a confession. As a solo podcaster, I have failed miserably at the timing of things. Yes, I failed myself, but more, I feel like I failed you, the lovely listener. I'm okay at themed months. I can occasionally get a JL May or a Mary Marvel March out on time. But keying into TV or movie releases, I'm just pretty bad at that. Case in point, last month, I read an issue of The Vision from 1994, and it would have made so much sense to read last month this series that I read this month, because I'm a Dummkopf with no common sense. So after the bandwagon passed, and after all the search engines have been optimized, I read, finally, from 2016 and 2017, Scarlet Witch, 1 through 15. Now, stop me when you've heard this premise before. Magic is dying, and what? Stop already? That's right, because we've heard that before, like, I'm going to say a billion times. But this time, technically, it's witchcraft that's dying, so I guess that's slightly different. And Wanda is on a journey across the globe to fix it. This is part of her new life choice of making up for some of her troublesome past choices by solving magical crimes. But really, this series is a travelogue. We get the Greek Isles, the verdant Irish countryside, a former Spanish convent, and that's just the start of the series. We get some potential answers for who Wanda's parents are, and we have her relationship struggles with both her brother Pietro and her ex-husband, the Vision. There's a lot going on in these episodes, and most of what was going on was really excellent. I thoroughly enjoyed this run. Issue 8 stands out because it's made up of a series of sessions with Wanda and her therapist, except it's not exactly a therapist. It's actually someone taking advantage of Wanda. But Wanda is also taking advantage of him, and also, she's getting some pretty good counseling advice. And then when she has a breakthrough, she has him arrested. An awesome issue. Now, that trade also had the related issue, Doctor Strange, The Last Days of Magic, an oversized issue that introduced a number of new magic characters and also explored this whole concept of broken magic, broken witchcraft. Which led me to find books from that run, from 2016, so I read Doctor Strange 1 through 10. I do like that you have magical shenanigans in the Marvel U that are impacting various magic-based characters at the same time. That's just good story planning, good work at the, to be honest, managerial, certainly editorial levels. As far as the stories themselves go, this wasn't too bad. You have the Empiricool, who are intergalactic, maybe interdimensional, beings who plumb don't like magic, and who are on a warpath to kill any and all aspects. In addition to Strange, we see Wong involved, having trained a number of acolytes, willing to sacrifice themselves in Strange's battles. There's a lot of gruesome stuff in here. Magic leaning into horror elements that are inherent in the genre, for sure. Body horror, in terms of the cost or the price of exercising magic, that is visually, viscerally displayed. Like I said, it's not the most groundbreaking story concept ever, but these issues and the Scarlet Witch issues, you know, both of those were pretty good to very good reads. I just mentioned Derek Crabb, and a while back he sent a care package that included a bunch of trades that he got for cheap from a well-known Mark Waid series. Dollar trades, I believe. So while the world was in a pandemic and lockdown, feeling generally irredeemable, I figured it was a good time to read Irredeemable 1 through 23 and a special. You probably know the story. The superhero Plutonian decides one day for no good reason, at least that's how it seems, to turn all of his powers against humanity and become the greatest villain in Earth's history. And he does some pretty bad stuff on a one-on-one basis and also on a global scale. And even as we learn more about him, some motivation or deep-seated issues that he has, he doesn't really become, at least in these issues, redeemable. And that would certainly be the temptation for any writer when they spend a lot of time detailing the life and times of a villain. We've seen this many times. And that's why we have that particular category for characters, the sympathetic villain. But fear not, again, at least through these issues, these first six trades, that is not what happens in these volumes. And that is a good thing. By the end of these issues, Plutonian has been captured and imprisoned by aliens, but that was in exchange for access to Earth information. And there's always the chance that these aliens will come back to conquer us. And of course, one thing I've learned from comic books and other pieces of pop culture is that even the most inescapable prisons are not actually inescapable. So I imagine that are among some of the things that will be coming up later in this series. Which makes this a tough series, a rough series to read at times. But it's compelling for sure, and just really, really good, definitely deserving of its Eisner and Harvey Award nominations. And then from Derek, along with the DCU app, I read World's Finest 284 through 288 from 1982. A pretty good bunch of issues. One features the epic awesomeness of the composite Superman, an issue which, of course, guest starred the Legion of Superheroes. The other issues were a connected multi-part story featuring Madame Zodiac, bringing into our world an other dimensional demoniac who possesses Batman and then creates an army of Batman clones. And Zatanna is recovering from a recent attack herself, so the world's finest heroes have to rely on their wits and their powers and their trust and their friendship. And spoilers, Batman is saved, as is the world. And from the combination of Derek, Kirk Spencer, and the DC Infinite app, I was able to read a nice little run from 2018, Action Comics, 991 through 996. This is the end of the Mr. Oz storyline, which led to Superman, accompanied eventually by Booster Gold, traveling back to Krypton before it exploded. But things aren't exactly what they're supposed to be. An important lesson I learned from these books, or at least had reiterated to me, is that no matter the era, if Dan Jurgens is writing about Superman, it's probably going to be pretty good. Manuel Carmona from Truthful Comics, as I mentioned earlier, sent a care package recently made up of some pretty cheap comics, including Alpha Flight 20 and 82. The earlier of these, from 1984, featured a new character, the mysterious, menacing, macabre, Gilded Lily. And the other, from 1990, had the team interacting with folk from Asgard. This is not my favorite super team. Don't tell Shag I said that. And these ones didn't really change my mind about that. Justice Society of America, 27 and 28, which included a visit from the Spectre and a trip to Hiroshima just before the bomb fell. Good mix of old and new heroes and a pretty good storyline. And Superman, 223, 226, and 411. Note that the first two of these were coverless, which is awesome. And there's some interesting stories here. 223 was sort of a revisit of those early Legionnaire stories where they would just mess with Superboy. 226 from 1970 was a King Kong story. And that one made me wonder, but I didn't check it out because that would spoil the fun, whether Warner's owned the King Kong license at the time. Because they not only recreated many beats from the movie, they actually watched the movie and gave it numerous shoutouts. And of course, Superman 411 was the Julius Schwartz surprise 70th birthday party issue. Fun all the way around. And I picked up a couple other Superman books from various cheap bins, 247 and 308. Of these two, 247 was my favorite, with the Green Lantern Guardians giving Superman a stern talking to about babying humanity and solving all of our problems. And somewhere along the line, I picked up the first two issues of an Alterna miniseries, which I think is five issues in total, from back when Alterna was still in previews, so I could get them in my pull box. Tinseltown, Losing the Light 1 and 2. In the early days of Hollywood, like the 1910s early, Abby Moore is a police officer working at Utopia Studios. And strange things are happening on the sets, plenty of accidents among cast and crew, so she has to investigate that while also trying to find a missing set of accounting ledgers, all while becoming engaged. Good character, great setting. I really enjoyed the original mini. And so far, this sequel is pretty good as well. From the combination of World's Greatest Comics and Kirk Spencer, I visited the Xavierverse with Uncanny X-Men 353 and X-Men 1997 Annual. One was Rogue versus Logan in a throwdown, in an issue that also had Logan being stared down by an investigator from the Department of Education. Like, You think Magneto and Sasquatch? You think that they're scary? Try a member of an accrediting agency or a financial auditor. That, my friends, is true terror. And from the 50-cent sale at World's Greatest, I picked up two oversized collections from 2011, Dark Horse Presents 2 and 3. Generally, as I've said here many times, not the biggest fan of anthology books, but I do dig big books at cheap prices. So that certainly helps the reading experience. A ton of these were sci-fi, and that helped as well. We had some Paul Chadwick Concrete, some Neil Adams, some Dave Gibbons, along with other lesser-known creators. The ones I enjoyed definitely outnumbered the ones I didn't in terms of the stories. But again, 80 pages or 104 pages for 50 cents each. Hard to beat that bargain. And from Pulp Reality, I picked up from Marvel from 1978, John Carter, Warlord of Mars, 1927 and 28. I really like Carter. His novels are probably my favorite of the pulp adventure books that I've read from that era. And these stories aren't bad, written by Chris Claremont and Peter Bigillis early in their comics careers. And overall, these are good, telling small parts of a larger like novel-style story. Although I don't think these are adaptations of existing Carter stories. Sometimes that's hard to tell with the Carter and with the Tarzan books, the Conan books. But the voice of John Carter, his personality, and of course his undying love of Dejah Thoris, all that was here, and all of that helps these issues work pretty well. Also from Pulp, I picked up Spectacular Spider-Man 140 through 142, in which Robbie Robertson is recovering from an attack by Tombstone, and he's facing a difficult journalistic ethical decision in the aftermath. Both Spidey and Peter Parker have run-ins with Tombstone, and because it's 1988, the Punisher shows up. And Peter and MJ are having actual grown-up relationship issues. And it's Jerry Conway and Sal Buscema, so it's a pretty good read. And from Hoopla, I read Giant Days 9 through 24, a series I started a few months ago. This is the story of a trio of British college ladies and their male buddies on occasion, and their lives and dramas and relationships, etc. We wrapped up the first year of college, and then we moved on to a summer of, that's right, drama and relationships and drama. The comic has so much relationship drama that there's even a very funny joke where one of the roomies asks another roomie if they need to go somewhere so they can fail the Bechdel test. There was drama about whether one of the gals would even return to Sheffield for her second year of college, but her buddies managed to convince her to return, much to the relief of her parents. So we get them as sophomores, and that 1 year of college experience does not really help them all that much. And along the way, there are a couple of standalone issues as well. One where they go to a comic convention, and then one where they go to a summer music festival. Both of these were terrific. And, I mean, really the whole series is. And it was nominated for some Eisners, and I'd say that they were very well-deserved. If you like slice of life, if you like relationship drama, heartily recommend Giant Days. I also read the 2016 holiday special from Giant Days, which takes sort of a what-if approach, looking at the girls in their freshman year. And from the DC Infinite app, I read a run of a new Digital First series featuring one of my favorite DC characters. This is Let Them Live, 1 through 6, hosted by the one and only Ambush Bug. The setup for the series is that Ambush has a job sweeping up the DC offices at night, the only job that he can get, but that every issue he discovers an unreleased classic, quote-unquote, from the vaults, which are in fact new stories set at times in DC's past. And the bug has some commentary at the beginning and end of each story. My favorite was a Batman story set early in his career. It was solid. Of course, Ambush Bug expresses disbelief that DC actually had an unpublished Batman story. That was the most unbelievable part to him. Again, pretty good stories. A real variety is a Green Arrow, a Harley, Flash, the Titans. And of course, if you like Ambush Bug, and you should, these stories may be up your alley. And an Archie Reed from Hoopla, Pep Digital 150. It's a little tricky to get seasonal reading from Archie all year round, because in the Archie world, the four seasons seem to be beach, which lasts about 6 months, back to school, Halloween, and Christmas. So there's just not a lot of spring stories, spring collections, but I found one, this one, subtitled Betty's Garden Variety, and was about planting and gardening and growing things and other spring-related activities. My favorite one was where Archie comes over to help Betty in the garden, but he's terrible at the planting stuff, so he just helps her by getting her drinks, fanning her, keeping her cool. And then Mr. Cooper ends up in the doghouse for never treating Mrs. Cooper that well when she works in the garden, leaving Mr. Cooper to agree that Archie is in fact a menace. And I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, Irredeemable was a tour de force. The Giant Days What If special in particular was a fun read. Also, the Summer Music Festival issue was terrific. I enjoy Tinseltown. Invincible, of course, was excellent. But in terms of what I thought was my favorite, I'm going the issue with Wanda and the Therapist. There's a lot of award-nominated books that I read this month, but Scarlet Witch number 8, I think that was my favorite read of April. If you have any comments about any of these books that I read, I would love to hear that. You can send that feedback via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook blog post for the episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at relatively_geek. And of course, the network has its own page on Facebook as well. Come join us. All are welcome. Thanks for listening, and keep the pages turning.